Roll 2d6, episode 17. Welcome to Roll 2d6, with Adam and Nate, a podcast about games, gaming, and gamers.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Roll 2d6. I'm Adam.
And I'm Nate.
And today we have another Zowie Blam Bamf episode for you about our favorite, well, Nate's favorite RPG genre, superhero role-playing.
Yay! You know, I have said before that I'm a web-slinging, spandex-wearing, cape-flying superhero freak, and I'm sticking to that.
And by that, he means the ceiling with his spider-like powers.
All right. Today I want to talk about Champions, my favorite, in other words, the only superhero role-playing game that I've played. There are a number of other ones. We're not talking about the superhero role-playing genre in general. We're going to talk about specifically Champions. So there's no GURPS Super, not doing the old-school villains and vigilantes, not doing Heroes Unlimited by Palladium, or the current Mutants and Mastermind D20 system.
How about Marvel Superheroes or the DC game?
Oh, those abominations. Yes, those could have made it to the list, too. Okay. Yeah, we're not doing those either.
I hope we do those at some point in the future.
We will. There should be a general show where we talk about some of these things. But we'll just go with the one near and dear to my heart.
Okay, well, Nate, let's put on our multicolored tights here, and you can tell me, what is Champions all about?
Boy, don't get me started. What Champions is all about. Just as a preface to this discussion, I'd like to say that I could talk about Champions for hours and hours and hours.
So settle in for a long podcast.
That's right. No, we're not going to burden our wonderful listeners with hours and hours of me waxing eloquent and talking about any particular guy I'd ever made. This is not going to happen that way. But just suffice it to say that we're trying to distill down this information into at least a manageable amount of information.
And you got to understand how painful this is for Nate to distill down his favorite RPG into
absolutely
a mere, podcast.
That's right. I'm bursting at the seams. I want to tell all. As a matter of fact, I think I've flooded your ears with it over the last several days. Every time we talk, I end up talking for another hour about it. So we're going to really try to condense this down. All right, so what is it? As we said before, it's a superhero, specifically a comic book, four-color comic feel role-playing game.
And by four-color comic, you mean this isn't like Dark Knight Returns? Or
yes, we're not doing... Yeah, no Dark Knight.
Modern psychological graphic novels.
Right,
or
nothing by Neil Gaiman.
I see.
Nothing by... So we're talking, you know, I guess you could say Silver Age or Bronze Age or even, I don't know, The Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man, which I guess wouldn't be those older kinds, older comics. But yeah, so four-color comic feel. I think I've heard people on the internet call them underwear perverts.
Yes.
They're the ones that are wearing the underwear on the outside, the spandex
back
outfit.
Back in the days when all superheroes wore primary colors.
That's right. You wear the primary colors, and you wear your underwear on the outside, and that's the sort of look. And that's the feel. That's the genre. It's a point-based character creation system. As a matter of fact, it was the first, what I've read, point-based character creation system, where you have a certain number of points and you use those to buy your abilities and powers. And we'll get to that in a little bit. One of the great features of the Champion system, and again, this was the first of its kind, was building powers from little building blocks. I want to contrast this briefly, and I said we weren't going to talk about it, but I want to contrast this with, for example, the Marvel superhero role-playing game.
Now, that's one of the few game superhero RPGs that I actually have played. I have played the Marvel one.
Right.
This was back when I was in sixth grade, so this was a long time ago.
Yes.
I don't remember that much about it, but go ahead.
But what do you remember about the stats or the powers?
Well, I only remember about the stats, and this is not related to what you were going to say. But the thing with the stats in that game is instead of being numbers, they were all adjectives.
Right.
So you had, based from the lowest was like feeble, and then you had weak, and then you had have normal, and then all the way up to like unearthly.
Right. Okay.
But that's what you were going to talk about was the power list, which I think in that game was actually a list of here's the possible powers you can have.
Right. There was a list of powers you had, I don't even know how many there were, but it would say invisibility, And your invisibility power worked exactly like the invisibility power that, you know, any particular invisible Marvel hero would have had. And if you have a Human Torch sort of power, you are exactly like the Human Torch.
Or if you had a fire blast or an ice blast or something
right.
like that. The only difference would probably be how many dice of damage it did.
Right. Okay. Well, actually, it would be... And in that, it would be rated in the old Marvel system according
right.
to the adjectives. It was either like a feeble ice blast or an unearthly ice blast or whatever.
That's true.
Or whatever the, I don't know, 15, 20 gradations they had in there. So Champions differs from this in the sense that damage is damage, and whether it's ice or fire or lasers coming out your eyes or an axe or whatever, those are the special effects of any given power that you buy. So if you bought a certain power of, you know, energy damage, this damage does energy type damage and I want 4 dice of it, it doesn't matter that you happen to pick fire, it still does 4 dice of energy damage. And you know, I pick laser now, fine, you picked laser, it's still 4 dice and it still costs the same. So they didn't have to come up with a discrete power list of every possible power you could come up with. You could build a power to fit whatever it is, whatever special effect you've seen in the comics or you wanted to replicate.
So it's sort of they move that work onto the players. So
yes.
You say, you know, my guy has, he wants to be able to blast people with ice, whatever. You say, okay, that's energy blast and 3 dice of damage, and you're going to put whatever special effects on it you want and call
right.
it an ice blast.
Exactly, exactly.
And then you would have if by whatever limitations you had for that to reduce the cost. We'll
yes,
get into
we'll,
that.
We'll get into that too. So essentially get the idea that Champions is not about buying a superhero power. Like I want to be faster than a speeding bullet, so I get power number 14, which is faster than a speeding bullet. If you want to, you know, to replicate faster than a speeding bullet, you have other powers with that you sort of have to combine together and buy in such a way that it has that same effect of this is what I want it to appear as. And so one of the cool things about this particular system is it lends itself to a genericized system. Now, at the beginning, and we'll talk about this in the history, they didn't start out as sort of a generic system. It wasn't the hero system. It was Champions. But it lent itself over the years into being more and more generic, so you could put together more and more different kinds of powers with different combinations. And because of that, it eventually became a you know, I don't want to say it, but a generic universal role-playing system where you could role-play in any sort of genre you wanted using this basic set of rules. For example, okay, the first edition of Champions came out in 1981, and it was very superhero-based. This is the one that I used to sneak into my older sister's room and read when I don't know if she owned it or borrowed it or whatever.
And
but
those of you who have been listening for a while will remember in the very first episode when Nate described doing this.
That's right, I described doing it. I forget that not everyone has been with us through all the episodes. But it's just more or less my nerd credit that instead of sneaking into a room and checking out her diary or anything like that, I snuck into a room, found her Champions role-playing book that she had gotten and was reading it. And it was in most of the powers were a little less generic, but they were still generic enough. Like there was still just damage, and then there was, you know, there was energy damage or there was physical damage.
Mm-hmm.
And then as it went into second and third edition, these became slightly more generic. They realized that they could take one of these very specific sort of powers and break it out into a couple different kinds of powers, and they were adding other ones that they hadn't taken into account that people were trying to do. So they added more building blocks as they went along. Second edition was in 1982, third edition in 1984. See, there's a lot of work being done to it and refining it all through the early
80s. Yeah, that's a pretty fast turnaround here.
Yeah, yeah. Either that or they found major mistakes and couldn't just release errata, had to do major rewrites for it.
Well, this is back before you could put an FAQ up on the internet and call
that's,
it done.
That's true. That's true. So when we get to fourth edition, 1989, now I owned both the third edition and the fourth edition, and after I went to fourth edition in 1989, I gave you my copy of the third edition.
Yes, which I have, and I brought it in here.
That's right. It's in your hot little hands right now.
I brought this in to Nate the other day, and as he was flipping through it, he's just remembering all the years he spent flipping through
that's
this
right.
book and all these illustrations.
The hundreds of times that I'd flip open and see an illustration and go, I remember that one. I saw that like 900 times.
Probably if I described any one of these illustrations, he could tell me whether it was on the left or right side of the page.
I probably could. Sometime after 1989, specifically 1997, the Hero Games had some sort of relationship with El Talsorian Games, the makers of Cyberpunk 2020 and Dragon Ball Z, and I guess there are a couple of other ones that they made. And they created Champions the New Millennium, and it was sort of a reboot for the Champions universe. In addition to being a role-playing game, all of the different examples that they had in the books and the different source material that they would put out in this sort of universe. So you could play with these, you know, the characters they used in the examples, or the villains that they used in the examples. And in 1997, when they came out with Champions New Millennium, they scrapped all of that. They did what they refer to in the comic book industry as a reboot or a retcon. They sort of started over and said, well, here are new sets of champions because superheroes because all the rest of them are gone. Now, normally people don't like reboots and retcons of their mm-hmm. comic books, and I have a feeling that, well, I can say in my case and in what I've read around the web, that not everybody was incredibly happy with the reboot of the Champions universe, and they were also not incredibly happy with the fact that they changed systems. So they'd gone from a fully generic or a fully universal role-playing system in 1989 to being the Fusion Interlock system, which is sort of a fusion of... the Fusion system is El Talsorian's Interlock system mixed with the Hero Universal system. And then they sort of put them together. They give you options as to what kind of dice you wanted to use.
That's right. You were telling me that they had both a D10 and a D6 version of all the rolls.
Yes. So every roll that you would do, you could do the D10 or the 3D6 version. And you just shouldn't give players that much leeway. And as far as I know, they had a second edition of Champions New Millennium, but people don't talk about it. You can hardly find it in the store. It went under the radar. And sure enough, the current edition is the fifth edition, and it's gone back to the Universal Hero system. And okay. They sort of ignored Fusion as if it never existed. And well, they've gone back to not only the original Champions system, but the Champions universe that was a part of it.
And this is something else that I wanted to mention, is that... Now, we had briefly mentioned the Marvel and the DC RPGs that came out in the 80s.
Right.
And because those were, nice licensed products, they could publish right in the book there, oh, here's the stats for Superman or for Batman or Spider-Man.
Absolutely.
Or people that you've heard of.
Right. That's right. And they own them, and they can do that.
They did. And they had stats and X-Men and all that stuff. And with Champions, this was its own property. They didn't have rights to any superheroes. They had to make up a whole world, and they did make up a bunch of their own heroes and villains.
Yes.
And had stats for them. And if you were a enthusiastic Champions player like Nate, you could follow the progress of these heroes as they...
That's right.
As each module came out, and they fought the villains, and new villains appeared, and their stories progressed, and some of them got more powerful or less powerful. And I don't think these heroes and villains, I don't think they ever appeared in any published comics anything.
Actually, they did. This is
this
is a nice little sidetrack that we've gone on. This is great because the Hero Industries, or whoever it was that was
Hero Games,
decided to put out a mini series of comics based on some of the characters that they created in the Champions universe.
These were just... probably had just started out as example characters from the RPG.
Yes, they started out as sample characters and sample villains, and they were actually put into real comic books. And I happen to own all of those comic books that came out.
Are they good?
No. No, they're all right. All right. I can say that one of them is especially good, and pardon to my... To my more tender viewers, but there was some hot lesbo action in one of them.
Kidding,
but it wasn't necessarily that hot. It was just implied. They were, and there was a nice little disclaimer on the first page saying, this is not really for kids, so you shouldn't give them this book. But anyway, I have lots of them. They were just all right. They were not really good.
Were you, as you read through the story, were you imagining the stats of each power as it was used? And
You didn't have to, because they would include the stats.
Oh, okay.
If they introduced a new person, they'd include the stats in the back or whatever.
Oh, okay. So you could say, oh, look, there's where he used his four dice energy blast.
That's right. In modern marketing terms, this would be a synergy product. It would be something else. It would be like creating a video game of it in order to, sort of have several products all with the same brand and make money from all of them.
Well, so I was going to say that Champions maybe suffered a bit from not having stats for heroes that anyone had ever heard of.
Yes.
But I think you and probably every player of it, the first thing you do when you get this book is come up with stats for Superman.
Exactly.
And Batman.
This is the very first
thing
you do.
And all your favorite heroes.
It. Yes. What you do is after you're done, you sort of have your mind wrapped around the rules. You don't go, oh, I'm going to create some sort of, great martial artist who has some mystic powers. You go, oh, no, I'm going to make, Green Dragon. Or it's like, oh, no, I'm going to make a really, tough sort of, bash-in-the-wall guy that's not the Hulk. No, you make the Hulk. Everyone's doing these characters that they actually know and like and want to replicate.
Yeah, and then once, of course, we got into the 90s, you got access to the internet and found that everyone out there has made zillions of versions of all these people.
Yes, absolutely. Usenet, their Usenet archives full of write-ups. In some of the superhero Usenet groups, people would say, well, this is my Silver Age Batman, and this is my Bronze Age Batman, and this is my early first Weird Tales Batman, and this is my Dark Knight Batman, and that you just have hundreds of these, and you could find back in the pre-web days of the internet, FTP servers full of Champions write-ups of various superheroes, of various licensed product superheroes.
Do you still have all those stored on your hard drive somewhere?
I do. Somewhere on my hard drive. I have hundreds and hundreds of these. And so at any moment, I could look up 38 versions of Spider-Man or 15 versions of Superman.
All right.
And So Champions itself and the universe, I mean, they didn't have access to these. They didn't have access to anybody that you would actually care about or anybody you'd have an existing history with. But they did give you a great model with which you could mock up or build your favorite superhero and have them go to town. Now, again, with the Marvel and DC universe superhero games, they were totally free to put in their exact same characters that they had, and so you had exactly what their stats were. And I knew Champions players that used to buy those books to get the stats, to find out how many tons they could bench press or whatever, so that they could recreate them in Champions rather than
system. Sort of a translation between that system and Champions.
Yes, and there were lots of those on the interwebs as well before the web. So Champions served as the basis of the hero system, which was this sort of universal system that you could put all kinds of all kinds of genres over. I mean, there was a star hero, Western hero, ninja hero, fantasy hero, you name it. They tried to shoehorn a genre and tacked on the word hero to it, and they sell these books even today.
All right.
I want to differentiate, and this is just, and I may make some enemies here. I'm not trying to because I love you all, but I just wanted to say that the first edition of GURPS, what people think of as the first generic universal role-playing system, was 1986. We've gone through three whole versions of Champions before GURPS 1 was ever released, okay?
Mm.
So.
Well, it's not called F-GURPS, the first generic universal role-playing system.
That's true.
It's merely a generic universal role-playing system.
There you go. All right, so. So let's talk a little bit specifically about the systems and creating guys, because honestly, this is where you spend most of your time in Champions, is creating guys.
Yeah, so now I remember, and this may be, just a sad commentary on Nate's life, but you spent a lot, I shouldn't say a lot, 99.9% of your Champions time creating characters and just playing around with them.
Right. Well, that was just me because no one else would play with me. But but just in terms of it, in terms of the game system itself, and I'm going to show the skeletons in my own closet in just a little bit. You don't have to.
Okay.
You don't have to.
We'll keep it locked up for a second.
Yeah.
More.
So, but what most people do is, you know, they want to make the characters. They, you know, they're part of the power of the system is being able to model exactly what you want out of all of these rules, and the rules
That's
are
right.
known for being very intricate and needing lots of math and needing lots of well, not complicated math, just lots of it.
Yeah.
And.
All the powers cost a certain amount of points, and then there's fractional increases or decreases based
yes.
on what advantages or disadvantages you have, things
Absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely. So you end up spending a lot of time, and I remember the first and only time we played, I tried to have people create their guys right there, and we were there for hours just making the guys,
well,
and we didn't have time to play, and so I had to... We had to set that off for, you know, here, do it at home, and then come back, and I'll check them, and we'll actually play.
And I think, perhaps, because you made so many characters all the time, you had basically had the whole book memorized.
Yeah.
And you did this, and it would be effortless for you to toss out in about, you know, 5 minutes a whole fully fleshed out character, because
right.
you had all the math already memorized.
Right.
And the rest of us had to look stuff up and try to weigh the advantages and disadvantages
right.
of everything. And
right.
you may have underestimated the amount of time
I
that
totally
would have taken
underestimated
us.
The amount of time. Yeah. So, okay. So you take your guys. okay, no, never mind. Tell you what, we will talk about my sadness before we talk about this. I did spend most of my time building and modeling powers and characters. I had a hard time getting buy-in from other people that were as big as superheroes and four-color comic book fans as I was. And so I spent a lot of time, and I bought all the supplements, and I read all the supplements, and I... you worked with it often enough that I had the basic power list all memorized, and I had
oh, yeah.
basic advantages, limitations all memorized. And then it was just doing the math, and it was just saying, oh, well, of course his ice blast would be a 46 plus one with a killing, whatever.
Well, and you get to come up with the character concept and
yes.
the chrome that goes on top of it.
Right. And that's where I spend most of my time, is coming up with a good concept or something interesting or an interesting power, and then trying to figure out how would I model this particular power in the champion's rules. How could I create this guy and
oh.
do that? And because I spent a lot of time doing this, I did get really good at it and really fast at it. And I remember a lot of times in high school being bored in French class specifically. I'm not sure why it was French class specifically, but I remember... Just a boring class. I remember sitting there thinking, well, wouldn't it be neat if I had, you know, wouldn't it be cool if I had a superhero who could do X, you know, such a thing. And then I would spend the rest of the class time doing all the math write-up, creating all the powers, doing all of that, doing a little sketch of the guy, what his costume would look like.
Yeah.
And then I'd look at it and realize, wow, that's a really good character, and no one's ever going to play that with me. So on my way out of class, I would ball it up and throw it in the trash bin on the way out of class. So I did this dozens and dozens.
Endless chain of characters, heroes created and tossed aside.
That's right. If it's true that there are parallel universes spawned every time we have an idea, I'm responsible
You're the
for millions.
Of worlds.
That's right. I'm the destroyer of worlds. So the creation and destruction of worlds. Building and modeling these powers was actually it was a really fun exercise outside of this, because I could say that all of my comic book buying and reading was research.
That's right.
So I could spend my time hanging out in the comic book shop looking through comic books for ideas for for superhero costumes and concepts and powers. I would buy all the Who's Who, you know, the Who's Who in the Marvel Universe or the DC Who's Who Universe compilations.
Oh, okay.
And when you showed me the Ticks, Circus of the Mighty.
Yes,
I had
right.
to get a copy of that so that I could get all of the stats and powers of the Tick and Arthur and these people, so that I could model them in Champions as well.
And
I have them.
How
so.
Would you model the Tick?
Well, he's 9 to invulnerable,
right?
Right. So I would make sure he had it. I'm not going to go through all of this right now. He'd have
okay.
a high physical defense, high energy defense, possibly a couple hardened defenses, maybe a self-heal or a regeneration.
Decreased intelligence.
And decreased intelligence. I'd buy off his intelligence. And I'm still not sure how I would model his spoon or his Viewmaster. I'm still not sure exactly what I want to do with that. But
okay,
wow, we've alienated everybody that doesn't know about the Tick. Okay,
that's so, okay. Right.
So building and modeling these powers was most of the time that I spent with it. We played once in the game in our regular game group. We played once.
Yes, that's right.
And as I recall, Joey was there, and you were there, and I think Joey's brother was there, and I think maybe Mark was there. I'm not quite sure, and I'm pretty sure Scott wasn't there.
I only have a vague memory of this gaming session.
I know. It was such a fiasco that and it was so useless. Because, well, the first time we got together, like I said, we tried to make the characters, and it took forever, and nobody was done, and so we just left and gave people homework. Go work on this, come back. And I think you gave me your character sheet at school the next day, and I looked at it, and I made a couple fixes, handed it back to you. And then the next time we got together, we actually played, and it was something really boring like, you know, supervillain team is robbing a bank and coming out of the bank, and you happen to be on the street and see it. And so stop, you know, because I was thinking, make two guys and have them fight, right? I was thinking I'm going to make a couple guys and have them fight.
It's introduction to the combat system, sure.
Absolutely, and getting people used to the idea of, you know, of how to use their powers and combat. And I was the only real superhero freak in this whole group, and Joey was second. He had read a couple comic books, and he enjoyed some of the X-Men, I believe, and he can correct me on the forum, or on the comments on the blog if I'm wrong. But
the only comics I had read up to that point were Mickey Mouse comics when I was little.
Yeah, and I had, like, no respect for that, so I...
There were some Donald Duck and Uncle Scrooge ones
in there,
too.
Well, the Uncle Scrooge ones were great, but... So, you know, really, I was the only person that cared about the genre and had a lot of experience in the genre. Other people had some experience, like Joey, to no experience in the genre.
Yeah, I think I had watched Super Friends on TV a few times. That was Super Friends.
You know, that's actually not a bad place to start for doing that. It's just shouldn't be the end of your superhero experience with comics. So I was the only one that did it. And because of that, it was hard for people to get into it and hard for people to really enjoy it. Plus, the system itself, because it has to be universal and because it models lots of different things, it's fairly complicated. Or it can be fairly complicated.
Not as streamlined as it could have been.
Right. It could have been streamlined a lot more. And so, you know, it wasn't something that we ever repeated. It wasn't something that anybody said, yeah, that was great, let's do it again. And I would say, like, a month later, yeah, that was great, let's do it again. And everyone would just sort of look at me and stare. And then we'd go back to playing whatever it else was we were playing. We all had this very similar experience with Ghostbusters International, that role-playing game. When Joey tried to run Ghostbusters, he was really excited about it, and the rest of us were just sort of about Ghostbusters.
Okay,
it was just all right, but it wasn't where we were at. But in my defense, I did play Champions on a couple of occasions, and they were all at conventions.
You did?
Yes, I played them at VegasCon. I played a tournament the 2 years that I went to VegasCon, and I had a great time and had a lot of fun. So I have actually played the game, although honestly I spent 99.5% of all my time involved with the game reading it, buying it, making characters, and evangelizing it to other people.
Well, you did make many, many characters.
Yes, that's what I did. So in general... With the system, what you do is you get a certain number of points, and that number of points sort of determines the power level of the campaign. Are you playing sort of a dark and gritty, you know, Daredevil, where the supernatural abilities are just the, you know, like a supernatural sense and really good at martial arts? Or are you playing something like Galactus and the Silver Surfer, or Doctor Strange tripping dimensions and moving worlds and all that sort of stuff? And you sort of set the power level of the campaign by the number of points. And you use those points to buy statistics, strength, endurance, your mental abilities, your intelligence, all of that sort of stuff, and your powers, whether you have energy blasts or whether you're just really tough or whatever. And you adjust those stat and power points based on the bonuses and limitations of the given powers. Some of the bonuses might include armor piercing, and if you make it armor piercing, then it can go through somebody's superpower that's hardened defenses. And some limitations might be not usable in a vacuum, which was one of my favorite sort of limitations.
Now, there are all these limitations you can put on things, like not usable in a vacuum, not usable in hard radiation, and stuff like this.
Right.
And I know you had a standard pack of limitations you
put on people. I did.
And these are the sort of things that if you had a regular GM, he might have not let you get away with this.
I think that exactly. If these had actually been vetted through a GM, they would not have made it through. And because it was only my thought experiment at the time going through there, then I could easily just come up with these package things.
Because you'd have, everyone has all these powers. None of them work in the vacuum of space.
Right.
But yet, you know, the characters never go to the vacuum of space. So it's not really that much of a limitation. So.
That's right.
So, but if I had a GM, you would spend half your time out of
the vacuum of space. Or you would not let us take take the advantage or the disadvantage to begin with, and we just have to pay more for the powers.
That's right.
Yeah. So, yeah. So having those thought experiments and being able to create these, I had my little standard packages, but I knew that as soon as I, you know, was when I play these at the con or whatever, there's no way that I could get that through. Get that through somebody because that's what the GM is supposed to do, is tailor the adventures to make things difficult and yet successful for you. And so if you had limitations that don't limit you, then they're not really worth anything. So
that's right.
So adding that package of limitations to my guy actually, if taken out of my sort of thought experiment world, you know, if I'd actually had to play them in a setting, the GM is supposed to be hitting those limitations regularly,
those
and they're supposed to be limiting me with those.
Yeah, it should be actually be a limitation.
right, not just a math.
So it's like, you know, something that doesn't work during the daytime, and then you can only use it at night, and so, you know, you should be not able to use it half the time.
That's right.
And I like looking through the list of limitations and disadvantages, and so there's things like it's a focus, which means it's a thing that can be taken from you.
Right.
And this would be like if you're Captain America with your shield, and someone takes your shield, you've lost half your powers now.
That's right.
Or Thor with his hammer, although he could just recall his hammer.
That's not really a focus. Or like Iron Man's suit is not really a focus because nobody just in the middle of a battle strips off Iron Man's outfit and says, "Aha! Now you can't fight me."
So then the focus you had. It was either obvious or inobvious, and accessible or inaccessible.
Right.
And each of those four combinations was a different panel.
That's
different
right.
Bonus.
And a different bonus. And very detailed. Very.
And then you had like limited uses, like you could only use it X number of times per day, things like that.
Right.
Or let's see, power only works in darkness, power only works in water, power only works in an intense magnetic field.
That's right.
Power.
My favorite is swimming bonus only usable in water. That's a good one.
Oh, you can't swim through through Jello.
Swim through Jello. That's right. Or you can't use your faster swimming speeds going through Jello.
And then when you look at character disadvantages.
Oh, okay. So this is a slightly different thing. Now, each one of these limitations goes on a specific power point cost.
That's right.
And then after you've assembled your powers and you've spent your points, you have to offset all of the points you spent with disadvantages. So you have to have the same number of points and disadvantages, give or take whatever the GM bonus gives you.
Because we know that every good hero has his fatal flaw.
That's right.
And if Superman did not have kryptonite, then that would be that he wouldn't be nearly as interesting.
Yeah, he would be so boring if there was not even kryptonite in there. So there have to be these disadvantages. So you balance out the points that you spent on powers and statistics with you can sort of think of them as negative points, or rather they're points in disadvantages, and those are very interesting as well.
So there are things like having a dependent NPC. So this would be like Lois Lane that Superman's always having to rescue, or Spider-Man's Aunt May, or
that's right,
something like that. A person who you care about and frequently have to
And have to rescue, right? Or someone that you have to carry about their well-being. Now you were saying just the other day. What about Superman's?
You were talking about how incredibly powerful Superman really is, and he's really sort of a galactic level superhero.
Right. If you model him in the Champions universe with everything you've seen him do, he's totally galactic and huge.
And so I was saying that Superman's dependent NPC is really the entire Earth.
Right.
And occasionally even other planets.
That's right. He spends time saving other planets as well, and he feels duty bound to save people on Earth all the time.
And so that's a humongous disadvantage.
It is.
So that's why he's so powerful.
That's right. It's gigantic.
He feels responsible for everything that's going on the Earth.
Yeah.
Let's see, you could be hunted by a group of villains or by some person.
Or some nemesis. You could have an arch-villain.
An arch-villain, yes. You could have a physical limitation. And they actually say in here that your physical limitation, this is like having no hands or no legs or blindness or something.
Right.
It has to actually be a limitation. So if you take the physical limitation of no hands, but your character has telekinesis, that's not worth anything.
Yes, you don't get the disadvantages for having no hands. Unless you're a glove maker or a glove user. No, I don't know how that works. But
You could have psychological limitations. And they don't have a list of here, but I'm thinking about this would be like if your character has a sense of honor and he's a code against killing people.
Absolutely.
Won't fight
yeah.
dirty. Things like that. Or even things like claustrophobia or a fear of fire or something like that.
Right.
I was just reading on Wikipedia the other day about Martian Manhunter has a fear of fire.
Oh, there you go.
And that's worth a few points.
Exactly.
Then there's, if you have either a public identity or a secret identity, these are both disadvantages.
Yes, having being famous and having a secret is both a problem.
Yeah, so you want to be sort of a mid-level of fame.
That's right.
A superhero who you can look up in the phone book, but people don't really know who he
that's
is.
That's right.
That's neither
you
an
no
advantage
longer have
nor
people,
a disadvantage.
You don't have paparazzi following
that's
you,
right.
And yet, you know.
And yet you're not having to worry, oh, what if someone finds out who I am? No, everyone
that's
knows
right.
who you are. They just don't care.
That's right. They know who you are and nobody cares. That would be the perfect sweet spot for a superhero to be in.
Yeah. And then you get susceptibility, which is like, you know, being vulnerable to kryptonite or radiation or magnetism.
Marshmallows or something.
Marshmallows,
like that.
That's right. And this is and this is the case where you can, if you have a lenient GM, you can put in some susceptibility to some ridiculous thing that you'll
right.
never encounter.
Right. Well, and here's the interesting thing is you'd think kryptonite. Okay, we're talking about Superman.
Sure.
You think kryptonite, which is shards of a planet, you know, hundreds of thousands of light years away or whatever,
yeah.
really far away, that happen to have intersected with the Earth. You know,
right.
pieces of kryptonite that have happened to survive reentry
mm-hmm.
and hit the Earth. Now, you'd think that this would be a rather rare commodity, but doesn't it seem like everybody and their dog has piles and piles of
that's,
kryptonite
well,
all around?
The more powerful he gets, the more kryptonite
that's right.
apparently is attracted to the Earth. I think he's doing it.
There you go. So even if you try to pick something that's really obscure, you're like, well, only meteorites I'm susceptible to. If you have a good GM, the GM will make sure that meteorites are constantly falling on your
you're
head or
during the Leonid meteor shower.
That's right. Or that everyone and their dog has a meteorite hanging around their neck, which is exactly what happened with Superman's GM.
That's right.
You know, he says, I'm only vulnerable to these rocks from my home planet a million miles away. And he goes, great, everybody has them, and it's easily smelted into anything you want. You know, people have bullets and hammers.
And chainmail, you can't even touch him.
That's right.
That'd be really expensive.
It would be.
Let's see. You could be unlucky. This is a just typical dice penalty. Or unusual looks. This is where you're... And it specifically says here that normal superhero costumes are not considered unusual looks.
That's right. Well, it's a genre thing, right?
So everyone knows what a guy wearing a red and blue costume looks like. You know,
that's right. Red and blue costume with a cape. You see him on the street. That's not unusual. He's this neighborhood's friendly neighborhood.
You'd have to look
Astro-Man.
Like a big, like the Thing or like a werewolf or a floating sphere, which there's a
there
picture of right here.
That's right. That's right. So after you're done creating all of these characters and coming up with these disadvantages and adding flavor and essentially, you know, grist for your GM's mill, you know, once
right.
you've come up with your list of disadvantages and limitations on your powers, you've now just pretty much told the GM exactly what he's going to be throwing at you for the next whatever.
That's right.
And one, you know, once you're all done with this, then you're ready to play. But by now you've spent 8 hours making your guy. And I recently heard in another gaming, I think it was another gaming, it was either a podcast or it was on a blog, there was sort of an argument about the pros and cons of complexity of setup. So some people really like the superhero games where, you know, you have fire powers, but you have to come up with how you're going to use fire in the middle of the game.
Like what?
Like what game? Or,
no, I mean,
or
like,
how would you
like
use
would
fire?
You, would,
oh, like you're the Human Torch, and you say, well, I control fire, so I'm going to make a fire shield and block and melt the bullets before they get to me. Or I'm going to use fire to lift to heat the air underneath me and lift my body up in the air or whatever.
I see.
And there are some superhero games where that's more or less the case, where the effects of what you're doing with your power you determine as you go along by role-playing means and by negotiating with the GM and with the other players. And some people really like that. And the people that really like that don't play Champions or the Hero System because all of that sort of hashing out is done. And this was the on the blog or the podcast, what they said was all of that hashing is done in the character creation process.
Yeah.
Once you've created your character, you've defined the scope and limitations of what you can do with your fire.
Right.
If you have not bought fire shield to melt the bullets, forget it. You don't know how to do that. And there's no reason
you can't turn your fire-based energy blast into a defensive power.
Exactly. If you wanted a defensive power, you should have bought one from the beginning
right.
with that and called it your fire blast defensive power. Or you can, over the course of the gaming, save up your experience points and then buy that power later on. So you say, I've learned how to control my fire because I keep getting shot. I'm working on controlling my fire to make it into a shield to melt bullets.
And that being said, there is a thing that is multi-powers in this game,
yes.
right? Which is where you say, okay, I have both this fire-based offensive power and a fire-based defensive power, but I can only use one of them per minute or something
right,
like that.
Right, or yeah, I can
and
use one or the other.
Cheaper.
Or I can, right, and it makes it cheaper than buying two separate powers that you could use simultaneously. And it allows you to put together these sort of packages of, you know, of elemental control. I mean, that's a really basic one that lots of people do, is the fire. You know, it's like, I can do 30 things with fire or 10 things with fire, and I've got them all listed here. It was cheaper than buying all 10 things separately and being able to use them simultaneously, but you've got 30 things and you, you know.
You can only use one of them every combat round.
Right,
or
however
like
often
that.
It takes you to switch them. Exactly. So I actually fall in the camp of the hero. I mean, I'm good for a good story, but I like the hero system getting rid of the ambiguity at the very beginning as to what you can and can't do with your
That's
powers.
Right. Now, there was something else I wanted to talk that I thought was interesting. You were talking about how this hero system has been genericized into science fiction and fantasy and Western. And you had a theory about how this was not a real good fit for the fantasy gaming genre.
Yes, absolutely. There's Fantasy Hero, which was actually a hero product that came out of Champions, but before it had solidified into the hero system and become a fully universal system. It was sort of an adaptation that Hero Games did. And here's why I think it didn't work so well.
You built your characters the same way, right? You'd
right.
say, okay, I'm a knight, I'm a wizard, I'm a rogue, whatever. And you
right.
buy powers, except this time they're fantasy-based powers. It's a magic
right.
spell, or it's a magic sword, or you've got your
right.
your armor, and you pay points for these, just
exactly.
like you would superhero powers, right?
Right.
You'd buy the sword, you'd have the spells, whatever.
Right. And so then you'd go out adventuring, and this is where the problem comes. You go out adventuring, and let's say your guy knows how to use a shield, but he doesn't have one. You didn't pay points for a shield,
yes,
right?
Because all beginning. Your items are paid for with character points.
Right. Everything that you own is a character point-based thing. There is no separate sort of money in this particular system, if I am to remember it correctly. And so you'd go and you'd kill a kobold, and he had a shield, and a player could say, I pick up his shield, I'm going to use his shield. Well, you don't have the point. You didn't pay for that shield. You don't get the advantage of having that shield without paying the points for it. And so one of two things has to happen. Either you have to say that your character never thought to take that shield
yeah.
and just wouldn't pick it up and wouldn't use it, or you have to somehow scrounge up, you know, some more character points, which you've already set your limit for the game, and hopefully you've used them all in order to pick up this shield and use it. Now, this normally is not a big problem with superhero games, because you never see Superman knocking out somebody and then going through his pockets, right?
Superheroes don't pick up loot.
Yes, they don't pick up loot.
They don't change from adventure to adventure. They have their powers. They use them, and over the course of the campaign, you might get some experience points and learn to do something after you go visit your mentor or your alien trainer, or a new meteorite hits you and gives you a new power. Or
right,
something.
Or whatever it is.
But you're not going to, oh, look, here's the gun I got from that villain last week. I'm going to use it now.
That's right. Nobody
that doesn't happen.
Exactly. You never see, you know, the costumed heroes, you know, just saying, oh, look, we pulled these guys out of the bank robbery, out of the getaway car. I'm going to keep this car because it's unregistered and I'm going to use it. And, you know, you don't
and
have
yet,
that.
And yet in the fantasy gaming genre, that is a standard thing. Is
That's
you're,
right.
You're getting loot as you go along.
Exactly.
You're
and
getting
you,
stuff.
And even if you're not getting stuff, you're getting gold. And let's say you keep track of gold pieces or something. Well, if you're going to spend your gold pieces on an object, you've got to pay for it with character points. And so you just
right.
can't say, oh, I buy the two-handed sword now, because a two-handed sword does more damage, so it would cost a different number of character points.
And so you end up having to play, and I say this having never played this is
right.
just us thinking about it, you end up having
yes.
to play Fantasy Hero in a way that is like a superhero comic book. Your group
right.
of heroes gets together, they go out, they fight the villain of the week, the evil wizard, the dragon, and they go back, and then next week they go and fight someone else.
Right.
And they don't ever really
have a continuing sort of story arc from week to week.
Or, and this is so different from like every D&D game I've played, where
right.
you're accumulating gold, and then each... And that's, you know, I don't want to say half the fun, but that's part of the fun is you go on the shopping spree of the equipment list.
That's right.
It's like, oh, I made 26 gold last time. What can I? Oh, I can get a new sword now.
It's
I
like,
can
oh,
sell
yeah,
back my
I
old
can
sword
upgrade
for 25% the... of its
right.
cost, and I can...
I can upgrade my armor, and I can
that's
get a
right.
better sword.
And that doesn't happen in Fantasy Hero.
Yeah, it's be so much harder to do in Fantasy Hero. I actually had a copy of Fantasy Hero at one time and looked through it, and this struck me as really weird. As I was going through it saying, yeah, but you spent money on the dagger. What if you want a sword now? You have to come up with points from somewhere else, which means you have to wait until you have more character experience to be able to to buy, you know, these other powers.
Yeah, and so you'd have to have players that are willing to play fantasy gaming in a way that is very unlike the way all other fantasy games, RPGs, right. are played, in sort of right. more unchanging way, or less, much, much less changing way.
Yes. It would be really hard to pull somebody out of Hack/D&D and throw them into Fantasy Hero. It would be almost
they would.
Impossible.
Have to be someone
to
who's a
that.
Really big fan of Prince Valiant.
Oh, there you go. Totally unchanging.
The comic that hasn't changed for 50 years.
That's right. Still the same 50 years later. Yeah. So let's talk about why Champions is cool or great or worth having. Other than the fact that I love it, which is enough for most people to just rely on my wisdom and do this. But you know, first of all, it's superheroes, man. Superheroes, which is all you had to say to me to get me interested in
That's
it. Somebody
right.
says, I've got a role-playing game about superheroes, and I went, I'm buying it. You know, that's what I had to do.
That's right. And it's the generic superheroes. You can do anything
yes,
you want.
Exactly.
And
I'm
fact,
not tied to the Marvel universe or tied to the DC universe. I can actually have my own my knockoffs, or rather my homages to the
right.
Marvel and the DC heroes. And you had another good reason.
Oh, yes, which is that, you know, I'm, and I say this not having ever been a comic book reader myself, but
right.
The stereotype.
This is how you imagine.
This is what I imagine comic book readers saying before Champions came out, is having arguments about, hey, could Daredevil kick Batman's ass? I don't know.
That's
I think
right.
he could. No, no, he couldn't. And so, given this system, you could stat them out and actually answer that question once and for all.
Exactly. You could
or
go
at least
ahead and model
move
them.
The argument into whether your stats for Daredevil are accurate.
That's right.
No, that power. He's got 16 dexterity, not 12.
So Champions is a great system, or the hero system is a great system for solving nerd arguments. You know,
that's right.
Or when somebody says, you know, could Spider-Man whoop Batman? I mean, that's even cross-universe. That's like, that's Marvel versus DC, you know. And
you don't
so,
have to find the one guy who can remember, oh, that was in X-Men number 12 where Wolverine fought
Right. You don't have to find
Batman.
The weird crossovers. You can actually just create the guys and have them go. You can have friendly battles. You can say, what if Professor X decided to really get down and whoop all the X-Men? Could he do it single-handedly? And you could essentially be the Watcher or one of these other sort of, you know, what if,
that's right.
You know, creators with your own system. And it's really great. It's well worth it just for that. And
how many times did you do that just by yourself?
Oh, by myself? Oh, a ton of times. Every time I made two guys and had them fight, there was some sort of you know, some sort of honor at stake for that, as whether or not Spider-Man would win. Or, I don't know. I did that all the time. So.
And you were telling me about how, you know, you did make these stats for people, but
yeah.
there were certain heroes that would be really hard to do in the Champions universe.
Yeah.
Like Spider-Man has sort of a really strange package of powers.
Yeah, he has a strange package of powers, and by the time you find what, and it depends on how you treat them, because the special effects can be different from the game effects, that, you know, the accounting effects. It depends on how you you see him using his powers all the time. For example, he's supposedly really strong, right? He's got the strength of a spider or whatnot, but he gets kicked around a lot.
He does.
You know, he gets thrown up against lots of things, and so he's not able to hold his ground very well. And so
yeah.
if you're buying strength, just as strength, you'd still have a certain amount of resistance to being knocked back, so you'd have to buy that down. It'd just be needlessly complicated. And also, like, his web-slinging. Web-slinging is an incredibly complicated thing where...
Because he uses it in so many ways,
right?
You know, offensively and defensively, and just to get around and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. He uses his travel. He uses it. I've seen him use it to, you know, try to take away other people's powers, their focuses, by, you know, getting rid of their gun or whatever. And he's also used it to bind people. And it's just incredibly varied on how he uses it. In order to catalog all of those and then model them in the Champions, it's a lot harder than, for example, the Hulk, which
That's
is
right.
throw tons of points into defense and strength and then call it good, and jumping and call it good, you know.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
really easy to do. But there are other ones that are much harder. And then you get people like in the Galactic-level campaigns where you have Silver Surfer or Doctor Strange or something,
yeah.
where their powers are so varied
yeah.
and so difficult, then now you've
it's really not meant for something like Doctor Strange type comic book simulation, because that's more psychological and
right. Well, I mean,
they
sell an expansion that they it used to be called Mystic Masters, but there is one now where they sort of deal with this, and they go into where it departs from your regular standard hero system rules and what you would use. There are some concessions that they have to make in order to fit the system, but mostly it's just a question of complexity. It's when you have a sorcerer that can do almost, you know, Deus ex machina, you know, he can do whatever he wants, whatever he needs to do at the time. How do you model that in a correct manner in the point system in order to have that effect come about?
And you model it in a way that a player playing him would have an actual challenge facing something.
Right, right, exactly. And so those become kind of tough. So it's a great solver of nerd arguments and
or at least transferring them into
them into a new domain. So now it's now no longer whether or not it could happen. It's did you model him correctly and do our models fit, which has now moved it out of the comic book counter at the comic book shop and moved it into the living room where into the RPG world where you're actually trying to put them together.
That's right.
So one of the other things that I got out of this, other than hours and hours of great fun and tons of my life used in thinking about – it wasn't a bad thing. It was a good thing. I got to think about superheroes.
That's right.
That's wonderful. One of the other things that I got is that this was my gateway game to Car Wars.
Yes, and I'll talk here about – this was one of the more weird crossover products of the early 80s. Is that and I guess you had heard about Car Wars through this product.
I did. I had never seen or heard of Car Wars before, but I was looking on the superhero rack at the local game shop, and they had a copy of Auto Duel Champions in shrink wrap.
Yes. And in 1983, Steve Jackson Games put out Auto Duel Champions, and this is a crossover product between Car Wars and Champions, and this would have been Champions, I guess, a second edition at this time.
Yeah.
And so what they have is a whole ton of rules for how to model auto duel and vehicular combat in the Champions rule system. And the Champions had, you know, very, very little about anything with vehicles.
Right, because vehicles were special effects of, you know, the Batmobile was not really something that you spent a lot of time modeling. It was the Batmobile was his just way to get from place to place. So, you didn't have... You know, in-depth rules about driving and cars and combat with cars.
And that's all non-combat time. It just happens.
Right. It happens between panels.
That's right. And so they had to come up with a whole ton of rules about how to do vehicular combat in the Champions world. And if you get hit with a machine gun, how much damage is that in body damage and all this stuff. And what happens if your superhero goes and punches the armor of a mid-sized vehicle with 16 points of armor on the side?
There
it's
you go.
All in here. And this is also, for those of you who are big Car Wars fans, this was the first introduction of both the Vulcan machine gun, I believe, and helicopters. The first helicopter rules for Car Wars were in Auto Duel Champions. They were since later superseded by Deluxe Car Wars, because these were all really bad rules.
And I love the comment. Yeah, I love the comment that you made as you were looking through it in front of me. You said, oh, look at all these very wrong, bad, horrible helicopter rules.
That's right. Well, they changed it completely because these were really kind of
It was their
broken.
First shot.
That's right. And there's all these rules about how they move and all this stuff. Oh, look at the old 10-phase movement chart. There it is.
There you go.
So they had... And
so like 4/5 of it is how to do cars and vehicles in Champions. Okay.
That's right, because there was so little vehicle stuff in Champions.
Right, there was almost nothing in Champions.
A really small part about how to do Champions powers in Car Wars.
Yeah, it's like 3 pages or something.
Because it was so much easier. And in Car Wars, 95% of what Car Wars is about is cars and vehicles.
Cars and combat.
And there's... People, the actual people who drive the cars are
damage sinks.
They're a 3-point damage sink, if you want to think of it that way. Your character in Car Wars is very simple. He just has a number of hit points, he has a driving skill, and a gunnery skill. That's pretty much about it.
That's right.
And he, they can move 1/4 inch per phase and all this stuff. So to put Champions characters into Car Wars was pretty simple. You just said, okay, now instead of a guy with 3 hit points, he's a guy with 20 hit points because he's really tough. Or he can move 2 squares per turn. Or he can, and it has...
Has a ranged attack instead of just, pistol. He has a built-in ranged attack, and that's his laser eyes or whatever.
it's all pretty easy to do, and they have actually a list of powers, champions' powers, like armor, darkness, energy blast, shrinking, running, growth, all this stuff, telekinesis, and how to model it in Car Wars, and it's just a few pages long. It's actually pretty easy.
Yeah.
Invisibility. For 60 points, the character may become invisible. Remove his counter from the board. Wow. I'm just reading that right here.
There you go.
And they have a sheet of counters, Car Wars counters.
These are really cool. I like these.
And they are pretty cool. And they have little pedestrian counters. These are the little 1/2-inch by 1/4-inch pedestrian counters from Car Wars, but they're all superheroes.
That's right.
And you have guys with capes flying. You have robot guys. You have guys shooting big energy blasts out of their hands and stuff like that. And,
yeah.
And then you have a few guys that are car-sized, and these are people with the growth ability.
The growth ability, yes. They are the Apache Chief of Super Friends. They're much larger than... Yeah. I really like this. And like I said, this was in a way, my gateway to Car Wars, because I had seen this in the champion section. And so later when we were getting together and you were saying, hey, we should play Car Wars, I'd be like, yeah, that's great. And because I'd heard about it before through seeing this book and knowing that it was there.
See,
and
I should have let you have a superhero in Car Wars, but I didn't have this book.
No.
I had seen this book. I had never actually seen it in a store. I think I would have bought it. I had always seen it in, like, the Steve Jackson Games catalog, and I had heard about it for years and years and years. And I didn't actually get a copy of this until just a couple years ago off of eBay.
Right.
When I was trying to collect every published Car Wars product. And this is actually a nice mint copy I got.
It's beautiful.
Unpunched.
It could have been shrink-wrapped, yeah.
And so as I'm reading this, I'm like, wow, this would have been great. We could have had a car versus superhero battle. That would be fun.
That's right. And I would have done that in a heartbeat. But as it was actually a really short sell for you to say car combat. And I went, oh, yeah, that's the one that has the superhero versus car combat game. I can do that. And we never did superheroes, just cars.
Just cars. But, you know,
but it was
fine.
It was
still
good.
It was
great.
And I'm glad it made you a little more open to playing Car Wars. Oh, I'm sorry that it didn't work in the other direction.
Whatever, man. It's all right. I'm alone in my spandex underoo wearing, and I understand that now.
And they actually have in here some scenarios. And they have a description of the Car Wars world, which is this sort of dystopic future in the 2030s. And they have superhero, and it's all about superheroes in the world of Car Wars.
Here's something.
And they have some campaigns, and they have some adventures, and they have some maps and stuff in here. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. Here's something that I also find very interesting about this is, although this little supplement here allowed you to cross over this starting to become universal system, because at the time it was just starting to be become universal with Car Wars, GURPS actually went the full Monty. They went all out, and there's a GURPS Auto Duel.
Yes, there is. They later made GURPS Auto Duel and had the full RPG rules for doing auto dueling.
Yes, and that one was way more successful than Car Wars, than Auto Dueling Champions ever was, I can tell. Because there are, I still see people, you know, playing it at cons, and I've seen it, you know, for sale at the local game store, and so I know that there's still moving product on this, and I'm positive that Heroes Games is not doing a second printing of Auto Dueling Champions.
I'm sure they are not doing another version of Auto Duel Champions.
Yeah.
But yeah, GURPS Auto Duel really did go out there, and they made actually GURPS Supers, several printings.
That's right.
I think, which
was
their own
printings.
Superhero.
Superhero genre books for there.
Where you could create generic superheroes.
Right. Or you could create your trademark ones
as
long as you didn't mention or sell them or anything.
Yes.
So, as long as you're doing it in the privacy of your own home, you could make Superman without fear of DC Comics coming down on you. But you would do it within the GURP system rather than one of these
other ones. Rather than with Champions, yep.
Yeah. So, Champions, and like I said, you know, we've gone a ways now, and I could talk for another 3 hours, but I'm not going to.
Well, we should do this in another. We should start having little tales from Champions, and you can talk about different characters you created.
I tell you, there's nothing more boring than listening to someone talk about what characters they created. And I love RPGs and everything. There's nothing more boring than listening to other people's character creation. So I'm not going to burden anybody with that.
Okay.
I've learned my lesson with that.
All right.
Champions, worth picking up. They're in their 5th edition currently. They're still in print. They even have some really great supplements. The last time I was in the gaming store and I was looking at this, they had some great supplements, including things that I wished I would have had back in the 2nd and 3rd edition days.
Yeah, they actually had, now at correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is the Hero Games, but when I was at KublaCon, I was looking over the books for this. And in superhero RPG parlance, you have different types of superhero, like you have a brick superhero.
Right. Or who'd be like the Hulk or the Thing.
Yeah, or you have a speedster, or you have
Flash.
You know, whatever.
Yeah.
And they actually had books like the Ultimate Brick Handbook.
Right,
and
yeah,
things
that was
like
then.
That. And
yeah.
If you wanted to make a brick type superhero, you had all the different ways.
It talks about the different ways to put together.
Kind of reminds me of when AD&D had like the Ultimate Fighter Handbook and things like that.
Exactly.
They probably have extra lists of powers for brick type superheroes and things like that.
And if they didn't have additional powers, they would have ways to, you know, to put together certain existing powers in such a way that would mimic a particular comic book power that you've seen.
Right.
There was one book that I really want, and if somebody's going to go out there and pick up Champions 5th Edition tomorrow, they should really try to go get this book. It was a book of superhero powers. I think it was called Until's Power Registry or something like that. Until is the name of, like, S.H.I.E.L.D., if you're familiar with the comic S.H.I.E.L.D., like Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D., right? But Until was the Champions Universe version. It's a super secret, super spy organization.
The only thing I know about Nick Fury is that David Hasselhoff movie that where he played Nick Fury.
Wow. Okay, well, okay, just like that. But this is, you know, sort of a super secret, super spy organization that fights with superheroes and villains or tries to capture, stop super villainy. You know, they're super powered normals or super technological normals.
Right.
And this book is under that rubric there, but it is a catalog of seen mutant and superhuman powers. And what it is it's a whole big power list. So if you want to have, like, and I'm sure they don't use the licensed names, but if you want Nightcrawler's teleportation ability, you can find it there under some other name, but they'll have it modeled out with all the champion stats on how to do the exact same ability.
Oh, I see.
And if I were doing this all over again and I wanted to get other people to play, I'd say, what are some comic book characters that you like? And then I just look up their power sets in that book and then have the power costs right there and already totaled.
It does make it a lot easier to put those together.
It would make it so much easier.
You can get the power with whatever bonuses and limitations it has, and it's already added up for you.
And it already fits, and they've already gone to the effort of fitting it to the comic book power so that, you know, if you're familiar with the comic book hero, you can easily play the power without having to wrap your head around it because you already know how the power works. Exactly. And it's just really great. So anybody interested in superhero role-playing games, I'd say check out the Hero System, Champions 5th Edition. Pick up the Powers book if you like it, or one of the Ultimate books. They're really good stuff. And, man, I wish I were getting a kickback from it. I'm getting a psychic kickback. The more people enjoy underwear pervert superhero things, the stronger I become. So everybody go out and enjoy.
That explains the glowing aura.
That's right. Starting to grow, yes, as we're talking. And that is a champion's power. Thank you.
All right.
As always, you can contact us by posting a comment on the Roll2D6 blog at www.roll2d6.com or by sending us an email at roll2d6@gmail.com. And if you like this podcast, then please give it a review wherever fine podcasts are sold. Stay tuned next time when you might hear someone say...
He's supposed to have transwarp drive. Aye. And if my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a wagon.